My name is Caitlin, and I am an Outreach and Recruitment Officer here at IIE. Today we're going to be talking about one award in particular in the 2020-2021 catalog, and that is the Fulbright Global Scholar Award, which is a multi-country award that allows applicants to propose projects in two or three world regions. As we go along, please feel free to type in your questions into the box that many of you have found. There's going to be a question and answer session at the end, but you can, as we're going along, if you would like me to elaborate, you can type into the questions box. And there's a question here, will this webinar be going over the distinguished chair? No, I am only going to be going over the Fulbright Global Scholar Award. So what we're going to go over today, I'm going to give a brief overview of the Fulbright program and then talk about the logistics and the finer points of the Global Award. I will also go over some samples of past projects, and then we will go into the application process, the timeline, including the review process, and then we will open it up to Q&A. The Fulbright program was established in 1946 by Senator J. William Fulbright from Arkansas. Having had his own exchange experience abroad through a Rhodes Scholarship, he was able to see firsthand the value of international and people-to-people exchange for fostering mutual understanding. Today, the Fulbright program is the U.S. government's flagship international exchange program, and its mission is to increase mutual understanding between people of the U.S. and people of other nations. The program is sponsored by the State Department's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, and it is administered in close collaboration with U.S. embassies and Fulbright commissions abroad by the Institute of International Education, which is a cooperating agency that administers the program. So before we discuss the Global Award in more detail, I want to review the basic eligibility requirements for Fulbright U.S. Scholar Awards. Regulations for the Fulbright program are created and revised by the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board, the FFSB. So if you hear me refer to the FFSB, that's what I am talking about. And as defined by them, eligibility requirements that must be met include a U.S. citizenship. Permanent residence is not sufficient. A PhD or other professional or terminal degree will vary depending on the award. I'd say there are about a quarter of the awards in the catalog do not require a PhD or terminal degree, but most will. Applicants that have equivalent professional or artistic training or experience are also strongly encouraged to apply, and this particularly pertains to the Global Award because we have our professional project activity type. For the Global Scholar Award, a PhD is not required. If we have any Fulbright alumni that are on the call, I just want to mention the newer policies that govern eligibility as it relates to previous Fulbright U.S. Scholar grants. If you've previously held a U.S. Scholar, not a student or specialist grant, within the past 2 years, there is a waiting period of 2 years between when your last grant ended and when your new grant would be able to start. So, for example, if your grant ended in January of 2017, you were eligible to apply again in January of 2019 for, you know, whatever cycle it is that's coming up at that time. There's no lifetime limit on the number of Fulbright awards that you can have. Okay, so the Global Award is a significant innovation for Fulbright. We recently sent out selection notifications for only our fourth cohort of Global Scholars, so this is a newer structure of award for Fulbright. The projects proposed must include at least two separate world regions. The regions are defined by the State Department as Sub-Saharan Africa, East Asia and the Pacific, Europe, Eurasia, Middle East, North Africa, South Central Asia, and Western Hemisphere. Within Western Hemisphere is North America, South America, Central America, and the Caribbean is all considered one world region. Projects which include countries from only one world region will not be accepted. I cannot emphasize this enough. If I had a penny for every time an applicant asked if they could go to three countries in Europe, I could take myself on a very lavish vacation to Europe. So the answer is no. You can explore our catalog to see which world region different countries belong to. Projects take place in two or three different countries in at least two separate world regions. The countries that you select must be places where we are currently sending U.S. scholars. To see if a country is eligible, take a look at the drop-down menu on our catalog of awards to see a list of countries that are in the catalog. If the country is listed in the catalog, then it is eligible. If it is not listed there, it is not. Every year we get questions about Switzerland, Lebanon, Chad, Martinique, the list goes on. The simple answer is that if it is not listed in the catalog of awards, then that country is not eligible. So for each country that you propose to visit, you will need a letter of invitation. The requirement for this award is that you need a separate letter for each country that you're going to. While the majority of applicants are hosted by universities, you can also seek affiliation with a research center, a nonprofit organization, a government agency, a museum, an archive. If you have any questions about whether your host is appropriate, get in touch with me by email. But generally speaking, for-profit entities cannot serve as hosts, and primary and secondary schools typically cannot serve as hosts. There is definitely a preference for local organizations. So if there's an international organization such as the Red Cross that you're interested in partnering with, it may be possible, and I can check with the embassies or the Fulbright commissions in the country to see if they're open to allowing scholars to be hosted by those kinds of organizations. But generally speaking, local organizations are going to be preferred. So this award is open to academics and professionals. Like I mentioned earlier, no PhD is required. What you can do is you can undertake a research project, a combination of teaching and research, or a professional project, and you can also combine the professional project with some teaching. I am going to get more into professional projects on another slide. But we have a very broad definition of teaching. You don't necessarily need to teach in a formal semester-long classroom setting. Workshops, seminars, and other short-term teaching engagements are considered teaching in the eyes of Fulbright. So if you plan to do any of these types of activities, you should apply for a combination teaching research or teaching professional project grant. It is important to note that projects must benefit from a global perspective. Your project statements should specify why each country is important to your overarching goal and what will be accomplished in each country, as long as how they all link together. You'll also want to provide a very detailed timeline of when each country visit is planned. The earliest that a global grant can start would be June 15th of 2020. The latest grant start date is May of 2021, and then all of the grant segments must be completed by August of 2022, and that is going to make sense in a minute when I explain the flex option. So preference is given to scholars proposing projects during the host institution's academic year. The grant length minimum is 3 months, and the maximum is 6 months. And you would need to spend at least 1 month in each country per visit. So you can accomplish this in several ways. You can do one multi-country trip, you can do two or three single country trips, or you can do two dual country trips. The flex option is also available for this award. If that sounds confusing, I sympathize, but I am going to show you some examples of how that works. So here are a couple of different scenarios to help me explain how you can structure the timeline of your global grant. In your project statement, your timeline should be laid out clearly, like you see here. Scenario one is one multi-country trip, so this is back-to-back, no breaks in between, one trip where you're going to two or three different countries. So for this example, going to France, Morocco, and Brazil, 6 months abroad, and you're going to France, and then immediately going to Morocco, and then immediately going to Brazil. Scenario two is two to three single country trips. So this is sort of what we would call a flex grant. To engage U.S. scholars that are unable to spend extended periods of time abroad, we launched the flex option several years ago, which offers scholars the opportunity to propose multiple short-term stays in the host country over a period of one or two academic years. If you plan to split up your grant into shorter segments, over one or two academic years with return trips to the U.S. in between the grant segments, that is considered flex. You can do it this way, or you can also do two dual country trips. And this one I give an example of spreading it out over two different academic years. So what is not possible? You cannot make six separate trips that are all 1 month in length. You can only do three trips total. You cannot do three dual country trips. You can only do two dual country trips. And you cannot do two triple country trips. So if you wanted to go to France, Morocco, Brazil 1 year, come back, and then the next year do France, Morocco, Brazil again, that is not possible. So you would only be able to do one triple country trip. Okay. So there's a question here about eligibility. What if the application deadline is before you receive your terminal degree? So for the Global Scholar Award, a terminal degree is not required, so that would not apply in this case. But speaking generally about the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, you would be expected to complete your terminal degree by February after the year after you apply. So if you're applying this year, September 16th is the deadline, you would need to have completed your degree by February, the following February, unless it is otherwise stated in the award description. I know that some awards, allow applicants, especially postdocs, to apply as long as they would have finished their degree by the time they would start the grant. But for the Global Award, it is not required. And I also want to note I'm seeing some questions here that are really specific about visas to particular countries. I'm not going to be able I'm going to try to answer all of your questions, but the ones that are really specific I think would be better answered in a one-on-one follow-up. So you can reach out to me by email. If I don't get to your question today, you can reach out to me by email and after the webinar, and we can continue the conversation. So how long counts as a break requiring a flex visit? If the trip was one semester, 3 months in one country, then home for the holidays, then back to another country in another world region for the spring semester. So yes, that would be considered flex if you're coming home. There's really no requirement. If you were only coming home for a week or a couple of days, then we would most likely not consider that a flex grant. And if you wanted to come home for the holidays, that would be something that you would be expected to pay for, that would not be paid for by your grant. But if you're going to be coming home for several weeks or a month, then we would consider it a flex grant. Okay, I am going to continue moving through because a lot of the questions that you are asking, I'm going to be answering in subsequent slides. So I want to elaborate a little bit on the professional project activity type. This is, for those of you that, you know, were around last year, it was new last year. This is the second year that we've offered this professional project activity type. So what kinds of activities are considered professional projects? Permissible activities might include visits to organizations in the applicant's professional field, practical experience in day-to-day operations, public lectures, artist residencies, or other appropriate professional experiences. If you're uncertain whether your project falls under the professional project activity type, you can reach out to me at the globalaward@iie.org email, and I can verify it for you. How does the professional project activity type differ from the research activity type? The research activity type really comprises traditional academic research, such as laboratory observation, field interviews, building of statistical models. And the professional project activity type would encompass undertakings that sort of fall outside of traditional academic research. In terms of application materials, professional projects include the same application materials as research proposals. So that would be, and I'll go into the application materials later, but that would mean including a bibliography. A big question is, can for-profit organizations serve as hosts for professional projects? So the answer to that is no. For-profit organizations may not serve as hosts for professional projects or any projects within the Global Award. Appropriate hosts might include a nonprofit, an artist residency, a studio collective, a government agency, a museum, a professional association, cultural organizations, universities, colleges, language institutes, research institutes, labs, think tanks, foundations. If you're uncertain whether your host is appropriate, again, you can reach out to me. Let's see, I'm seeing a couple of questions here. Does a host institution need to be local, or can we partner with American organizations that work overseas? Local organizations operated by citizens of the host country are preferred. However, in some cases, international organizations have been approved. And let's see, can medical professionals apply for a grant under the professional project activity type? So yes, the grant is meant to for professionals in all fields. However, proposals for medical research involving clinical training, patient care, or patient contact are not eligible. Medical professionals should propose projects that do not involve these kinds of activities. Fulbright policies do not authorize activity for which a license to practice medicine or nursing would be required. So a good question here, would an artist who is a professor apply to the professional project type? So that is really up to you, and it is based on what type of project you are working on. Is it if you're a professor and you're going to be doing research that is considered more scholarly research, then you would apply for a research grant. If you are going to be going to a collective, or you're going to be going to a residency, or you're going to be developing a collection, that would be a professional project, and you would apply under the professional project type. And I am getting a couple of questions about examples, and I'm going to be going into some examples in a couple of slides. Do all the countries have to have a flex option, or does global? So has been some confusion about whether you need to follow the, whether if you go to, if for example, you go to an award, the All Disciplines Award to Morocco, and if they don't offer flex, can I still, you know, do flex with global? You can disregard whether or not countries offer flex, if they, what disciplines they've listed as priorities, all of that you can disregard for global. All countries are eligible for flex if you are applying for a global award. And all disciplines are eligible for global as well. Can you do different activities in different countries? So yes, you can. I would say that you'll just need to make a strong argument for why. So strong global projects are ones that you're able to make a strong argument for why you need to go to multiple countries and what the connection is between each. So if you're, you know, proposing to do some kind of teaching in one country and then a completely different kind of research in another country, then you really would not be able to make a strong argument for the connection between the different parts of your grant. So you're not technically required to do the exact same activities in each country, but I will say that all of the global applicants that were selected this year, all of their grant segments were interrelated. Okay, I am going to keep moving. So in terms of benefits, all of this is available in the award description, but I'll go over it quickly because we always get questions about it. So your grant provides you with round trip economy class airfare to and from each of the countries you would be visiting. You'll also receive a $500 relocation allowance per country per visit to cover the cost of, you know, shipping belongings, overweight baggage, etc. If you're going to be proposing some kind of teaching, a book allowance is available of $750. And then the books that you purchase should be donated to the host institution upon completion of your project. And then while other awards offer you know, airfare, increased stipend, tuition benefits for accompanying dependents, there are no dependent benefits available for the global award. And then the monthly stipend rate is generally going to follow the rates for U.S. scholar grants proposed in each country. So you can find these rates by visiting the award descriptions in the catalog and for the countries that you've selected and navigating over to their award benefits tab. So going back to the example of Morocco and Brazil, you would navigate the catalog to the All Disciplines Award to Morocco. You can look and see what is the monthly stipend there, and that's basically what you can expect when you go to Morocco. And the same would go for France, and the same would go for Brazil. Those are estimates. The amount can vary slightly depending on your academic rank, the city or country of placement, and the type of award that you're doing. Teaching grants do tend to have higher stipend rates than research-only grants. And then the final amounts are determined prior to the start of the academic year. And if you are selected for a grant, you will be presented with a grant document that outlines the exact stipend amounts that we are proposing for your grant. Okay, so to give you a sense of some of our past projects, this page is intended to give you an idea of, you know, sort of the types that have been successful in the past. They span all imaginable disciplines. So we have the arts, environmental studies, religious studies, sports, economics, education. All disciplines are welcome. As you can see, all of these projects have at least two world regions indicated. If you may have, if you have seen examples in the past of projects 2-1 world region, that was may have been before we implemented the 2 world regions rule. We only had the 1 world region for the very first cohort, and we changed it within the second cohort. So there are no preferences for specific disciplines and countries, but the selections represent superior projects that come from a range of different disciplines and countries. We just sent out our 2020-21 selection notifications, and I wanted to highlight some of the professional project applications that were successful, as they can help give you an idea of what kinds of professional projects we're looking for. So one was in education and psychology. We had a candidate that proposed building a mentorship program for medical students that are interested in child psychology within each of the host countries. And then they will be building an international collaborative mentorship network to connect them based on the model that this applicant helped to create at her home institution. Another successful professional project was in environmental sciences and conservation, and the candidate will be researching partnerships between ecological field stations and land protection networks, which is an emerging trend that's proven to be critical to effective climate adaptation for natural ecosystems and the communities that rely on their ecosystem services for survival. The candidate also proposed sharing lessons learned to advance this approach in California to communities that are living under similar Mediterranean landscapes, and in turn learning from diverse global innovators in this arena. Another project combined a professional project with teaching, and this candidate proposed training professional preparation students, faculty, and teachers in the host countries how to teach sports to children with visual impairments, blindness, or deafblindness. And so these trainings would help stakeholders in the host countries learn about the abilities of these children and ensure that they can reach their potential. Another project that is, I always like to highlight because I think it's really interesting, we had an LAPD officer that went to went to the UK, and I don't remember where else he went, but he went to train with local police stations to learn about their terror response plans, and then so he went and he learned about that, and he sort of shared some of the tactics that the LAPD uses, and then he brought what he learned back to his precinct in the U.S. and it sort of transformed the policies that they have on that particular thing. We also have seen lots of people go into artist residencies as well. So for more details on selectees for this coming year are not going to be released until October via our scholar directory, but you can also see on the Global Award webpage on the CIES.org website, there are for the last couple of years, you'll be able to see who's been selected and what their project types were on. I'm not going to go into too much detail about these other multi-country awards, but if your project is to multiple countries in the same world region, then Global is not for you. We do have several other multi-country award opportunities that may be a better fit. So, if you're interested in 3 countries in Sub-Saharan Africa, 3 countries in Middle East, North Africa, South Central Asia, we do have a couple of awards in Europe, the Fulbright-Schumann Awards, which would allow you to go to European Union nations, the Carlos Rico Award for North American Studies would allow you to go to both Mexico and Canada. So I would encourage you to explore these award opportunities in the catalog if you're interested in them. We do also have, not listed here, are two newer multi-country awards, which would allow for teaching and research in both either Morocco and Spain or Spain and Greece. So if you are interested in those countries, we do have 2 different awards that would allow you to go to both. Okay, so what exactly does the application look like? It is fairly straightforward. In addition to a standard form with your personal information, we ask for a 3 to 5 page project statement. The document should be single-spaced with 12 point or larger font size and 1-inch margins, headers and bullets. To organize and convey key elements and page numbers I highly recommend. It's very helpful for the reviewers as they are going through your application. So broadly speaking, your project statement should address what you propose to do, how you propose to do it, why it's important, and most importantly, what benefits is it going to produce for the host country, the host institution, for your discipline, for you, and for your home institution. This impact multiplier effect review criteria is, I think, if you overlook that, that would be the biggest mistake you could make in your application. So there is more guidance about the project statement, including some prompting questions and samples, the review criteria on our website. It's important to remember that if you're applying for a Flex grant, this is where you are going to set out clear plans and justification for Flex, including a project timeline. This award also requires letters of invitation from each host country. So a letter of invitation is an expression of interest from a host institution. And what it should include would be the activities you're being invited to do by the host, the period of time that you're being invited for, and a description of the host's interest in your project and how it is going to benefit their institution. It should be on official letterhead, and if the letter is not in English, you'll need to include an English translation of it alongside with the original. A single institution is free to send letters of invitation to multiple candidates, so be aware that a letter is not a legally binding pledge, nor does it guarantee an applicant a grant. So how do you get a letter? If you do not have contacts in your country of interest, you are not alone. Most applicants don't. And we do have some recommendations. So start out by using the resources on your home campus. There's an international office on your campus. Speaking to international students or faculty, as well as area studies faculty on your campus who may know people in your discipline in other countries. You can talk to other colleagues who have gone abroad. You can contact current and former Fulbright scholars. You can find them by taking a look at our scholar directory, which you can find by going to our website, cies.org, and there is a link to it right on the very front page of our homepage. So using the scholar directory, you can narrow it down. You can, for example, you can go in and you can look and see, okay, where have Fulbrighters gone in Morocco? You can search, look for CORE. You're looking for U.S. scholars. You want to look in Morocco, and it will pull up a list that will have information about the project titles, the names, the countries, the host institutions of previous Fulbrighters. Our alumni are very helpful people, so if you see someone who has previously gone to the country you're proposing to and you're interested in their host institution, you can always reach out to them to ask for an introduction. Faculty emails are alarmingly easy to find on the internet if you just Google someone, so you can usually find our alumni that way. And really, Google is your best friend. Look at university websites in the host countries you're interested in, and you can oftentimes locate information for different departments in just a few keystrokes. Me personally and us at IIE, we do not keep any names or contact information for people at specific institutions. So this part is going to require some hard work and some ingenuity on your part. One recommendation that I always like to give applicants is, you can always pursue multiple letters of invitation in multiple countries and see what comes back to you, especially at this point in the application cycle. Applications aren't due until September. You have a couple of months. If you are not sure which countries you want to go to, start reaching out and see what comes back to you. And you know, you may find that, you know, one letter of invitation is much stronger than another, or there's a much better fit at one institution over another. You would just only be able to include letters for the countries that you're proposing to go to in your application. But, you know, you are free to pursue as many as you want before you submit your application. Three letters of reference are required. So if you are proposing to teach, at least one of those letters must address your teaching. So someone that has evaluated your teaching or that has, you know, sat in and seen you teach, that's been a part of your, read your teaching evaluations, anything like that. We have lots of tips for submission of references on our website, who should serve as a referee, all of that. But I want to underscore that anyone who provides an applicant a letter of invitation cannot also serve as a referee to the same applicant. Then also, applicants must register their referees in the online application, and the references must be submitted via the online application. We do not accept mailed-in references or emailed references. You cannot submit a letter of reference on behalf of someone. What you do is you register them in the online application system, their name, their email. They receive an email, and they are able to upload their letter to your application using the link that is sent to them. So there are additional supplemental materials for applicants in specific fields, you know, architecture, the arts, creative writing, dance, film studies, music, and theater arts. Supplemental materials are directly uploaded into online application system. If you are not in one of these fields, please do not upload supplemental materials. And a very detailed list of which disciplines require supplemental materials is on our website. And then regarding the language requirement for the Global Award, you should confirm with the host institution the language of instruction for your proposed teaching. For research grant activity, language fluency sufficient to complete the research project is what is required. So for applicants that do not have the local language proficiency, you need to demonstrate the feasibility of conducting your research in the project statement and in the language self-evaluation form. So non-native speakers who have local language abilities are asked to complete the two-part language proficiency report. Part one is a self-evaluation, and part two asks you to register an external evaluator. This part of the report is completed by an appropriate foreign language instructor through the online application reference system. So to sort of sum that up, if you do not have local language proficiency, what you need to do is explain in your project statement how you're going to complete your research without that language. Are you going to be working in a lab where everyone speaks English? If that's the case, please explain. Are you going to be working with a, you know, collaborator that is fluent in the language, or are you going to be hiring a translator? If you don't have the local language proficiency, you just need to demonstrate to us that you have thought that through and have plans to navigate that. If you do have the language proficiency, you fill out the self-evaluation, and then you register an external evaluator as well. So, to be completely frank with you, the Global Award is by far the most competitive opportunity that we offer. I cannot give you exact application numbers or success rates. It varies every year, but speaking from my personal experience, every year we receive more. If we started with 100, the next year it doubles, and the year after that it doubles, and it just seems like the interest in this award continues to grow. So I think that all of you on this webinar should be aware that this opportunity is very, very competitive, especially compared to other awards in the catalog. To be successful, your proposal needs to be three things. It needs to be clear, it needs to be concise, and it needs to be compelling. Each individual's application should be about the candidate, about how the grant time will be spent, and what outcomes can be reasonably expected. So within the project statement, you know, it's a brief self-introduction to the reviewers. It's an opportunity to provide answers to the questions that reviewers may have about you. such as, you know, why are you interested in Fulbright and why to these particular countries? I cannot underscore enough why to these particular countries. Your application is going to be read not only by peer reviewers, but it's also going to be read by the host country. Typically, that is U.S. Embassy staff or Fulbright Commission staff. These are nationals, typically, of the country. And so they weigh in on whether they are interested in having your project funded for the Global Award and whether they want you there. And so you need to speak specifically to them about why you chose their country and why it is relevant to their country, what the impact is going to be to their country. You also want to talk about, you know, like what professional experiences and skills do you offer the host institution and host country? What do you hope to gain from the experience and what are the potential long-term impacts, not only for you but for your hosts? How adaptable are you? How well will you deal with challenging situations? And then focus on what you plan to do. There's a separate part of the application for your resume. So, you know, you really don't need to just recite your resume. You want to really focus on your project and all of that. Actually, before I move on, I want to go back to the application components. I realize I skipped over a couple of these points. So the CV is it's short. It's up to six pages. If you're going to be teaching, you will upload at least two sample course outlines, up to 10 pages total. And these can be courses that you've taught previously, or they can be new courses that you've designed. You just need to sort of indicate, you know, if they're new or if they're old. But really the purpose is to get a sense of your teaching philosophy and how you would organize a course if you were to go and do teaching. The select bibliography is for if you're going to be conducting research or professional projects. And the select bibliography is not an extension of your project statement where you list works cited. That is not what it is. The bibliography is more like a literature review where you're going to be talking about, you know, what are some of the other publications, journal articles. If you're doing a professional project, you know, what are some of the other, you know, museum exhibitions that have been similar, things like that. They should not only be by you, they should be by other people, and it's really meant to give the reviewers a sense of where your project fits within what is currently being done on that topic. And the bibliography is 1 to 3 pages. Okay, so after you've submitted your application, what happens? So the first stage, after turning it in on September 16th, or earlier if you are an early bird, is the technical review. So IIE staff, like myself, will review your application to make sure that you followed the instructions. So we will be checking for page limits, eligibility, appropriate host country choices, appropriate dates, and so on. Please pay attention to page limits and appropriate grant start and end dates. We will catch those things. We will catch if you try to sneak in an extra page to your project statement, and we'll just ask you to change it anyway. So please pay attention to the page limits. Next, your application will be reviewed by a peer review panel of discipline experts. The experts are typically Fulbright alumni. And in peer review, applicants are either recommended or not recommended for further consideration and then are notified of this outcome. And those notifications typically come out around Thanksgiving, though this year, because we've pushed the application deadline back to September 16th. In previous years, the application deadline has been August 1st. We are hoping that we will be able to get those notifications out to you by about the first week of December. Don't quote me on that, but that is what our goal is. The peer reviewers are going to be assessing your application based on the review criteria that are listed conveniently for you on the website. We cannot provide reviewer comments if you are not selected per FFSB policies. the reviewer identities and their comments are confidential. But if your application does not pass through peer review, you can reach out to us and we can offer some tips and tricks about how to put together a strong application. So for applications that were recommended following the peer review, the next stage is multi-pronged. There is in-country reviews, the FFSB review, and the U.S. Department of State's approval. So please note that we need to have decisions from all three before we can notify applicants of the final outcome. That is whether or not they have been selected for a grant or named an alternate. So you may be wondering what criteria are used to evaluate applications in the review and selection process. And we've outlined that on our website, but a super short version is, you know, ultimately those reviewing the application expect you to demonstrate that you're qualified and able to take on what you propose, that the project is sound and well planned, that you can adapt the project if you need to and probably will need to, and that it will have an impact. You need to show that you've done your homework to prepare for this project regardless of how much experience you have had doing similar projects. And then lastly, sort of your Fulbrightiness, coined by some of our peer reviewers, this gets at your willingness to engage with the community while you're on your grant. And it's an important aspect that is unique to Fulbright. Also, please remember that while your project statement needs to address the technical aspects that your peers expect, it also needs to be described in a way that a lay person can understand easily. When your application is going to be reviewed in the host country and by the State Department, these people are not academics usually, so make sure that you are not using too much jargon. It needs to be accessible. I want to elaborate a little bit on the review process, the in-country review process. So what exactly happens once your application makes it overseas? So I am not privy to any specific reasons why candidates are selected or not selected. The reality is that the Global Award is the most competitive opportunity that we offer by a very significant margin. And so there are far, far more exceptionally qualified candidates than there are awards or funding available. So if your application passed through the peer review stage, that means that it was already a very strong application. If your application is unsuccessful at the in-country review stage, I will not be able to tell you why. However, I can offer some general guidance based on my knowledge of the in-country review process. And this guidance is especially tailored to those of you on this call who just received non-select notifications for 2019-20. So when the applications go to the host country, there is a survey that they fill out and return to us. And there are three criteria that they review applications based on. One is the applicant's cultural adaptability, sensitivity, and language proficiency. Two is the project's feasibility. And three is the project's outcomes, benefits, and impact. So that is what the Fulbright posts and commissions, the embassies, are going to be looking at when they take a look at your application. Applicants should clearly outline the impact of their project, what the impact is going to be on them, on their host institution, their host community. I feel like I've repeated that a lot of times, but I cannot understate enough how important that is, particularly for global. Applicants should also address the project's relevancy to the country and demonstrate what they hope to accomplish is feasible in terms of your timeline, your cultural appropriateness, security, etc. The letter of invitation is also an important component, and so a strong application is one where the host institution addresses the project's merits and potential impact, as well as the resources that will be available to the applicant from the host institution. So it is also vital that applicants make a strong case for why they need to visit multiple countries instead of just one. So I will be completely honest with you. We have a lot of applicants that they come into Fulbright thinking that they want to go to France. They get distracted by the shiny Global Award, and then they change their project to include another country because they think it would be fun to go to multiple countries. We can usually tell when that happens, and those applications are not strong global applications. If you can very easily do your project in one country over multiple countries, I would advise you to apply to a single country because you will be more competitive there. So multiple countries, you need to make an argument that you need to go to these countries and it needs to be multiple countries. For example, there is one applicant I worked with that was following the migration of a particular bird, and they were following it from one country to the next country to the next. So that made a really strong argument for why multiple countries. So make sure that you are making that argument. Okay, now I would like to open the floor, the virtual floor, to any of your questions. So I can see you've already been typing a lot of them into the chat box on the screen. I will read through and answer where I can. If your question is very specific to your situation, like I said earlier, please reach out to me at the email on your screen. Okay. Great. Will you share the recording? Yes, this is being recorded, and I will be uploading it onto our webinar archive on the CIES.org website at some point probably next week. May we suggest peer reviewers in our specific field of expertise? So if you're asking whether you can suggest particular people, the answer to that is no. We have a very robust panel of hundreds of peer reviewers that we have worked with in the past, so we are not taking recommendations. If you are wanting to make sure that your application is reviewed on a particular panel or by particular someone with a particular expertise, within the application there is a section where you talk about your discipline, and you're able to sort of your main discipline, your specialization, and then there's an other where you can sort of write in. So if you have something really specific like animation, you can write that in there, and we'll make sure that it is reviewed by someone that is that is within or very close to your discipline. Can someone apply for the Global Award at the same time as another award, like a Distinguished Chair Award? No. So the Global Award is just one of, 470-something different awards in our catalog this year. You can only apply to one. So if you apply to the Global Award, you cannot apply to another single country grant. Okay, I am going to slide up to see what were some of the earlier questions. Is it permissible to use the Fulbright Global Award in combination with additional project or institution funding? So, yes. You will, if you are selected, first of all, I would not mention it in your application because you are only applying for Fulbright funding. If you have other separate funding for another project, or you're planning on staying longer in the host country, you wouldn't mention that in your application. We do have lots of people that stay on after their grant with different funding. If you're going to have additional project funding, that's going to be helping with, if you're having, for example, you have some expensive lab equipment and you have other funding that's going to cover that, feel free to mention that in your application. If you are selected for a grant, you'll need to disclose any separate or additional funding that you're receiving for this research project. And if there's any duplication of funds, then that, we would adjust your Fulbright stipend based on that. We wouldn't, for example, if you're already receiving airfare stipend from one grant, we wouldn't also give you one for Fulbright. Or if you're already receiving a living stipend from your other, we wouldn't want to have duplication of funds. Are emeritus faculty eligible to apply for this award, or do you need to be currently teaching at an institution? So yes, emeritus faculty are eligible. This award is open to all career stages. We have a lot of retired emeritus faculty. You can be a senior faculty member. You can be early career. You don't have to be a scholar. You can be a professional. You can be a doctor. You can be a police officer. You can be an artist. This award is very, very wide open. Would travel in December and January be acceptable? So yes, there is a preference for grants that would, you know, bring you to the host country when, particularly if you're going to a university, when people are on campus. If you are planning to go to your host institution when no one is there, it's more difficult for you to make the argument about impact to the host institution. It's hard to impact people if no one's there. So you'll just need to, you know, otherwise emphasize, you know, what your plans are for engaging with your host country and your host community to provide that very important impact portion. Okay, do we need to create a project and then see if specific countries are interested, or choose the countries and then cater to what they need? You can really go about it either way. If you have a specific project in mind, you can start reaching out to countries and see if it is a good fit. I would say you need to at least have some broad outline of what you want to do. I wouldn't recommend reaching out to host institutions and just saying, help me create a project. You know, the onus is really on you to design your project. But I do also think that it is a smart idea when you're reaching out to host institutions to not only say, here's what I'm doing, support me, but to say, here's what I'm thinking about doing, here's what I can offer, what are some of your needs, and you can sort of tailor your project from there. This is particularly important for teaching. You know, if you know you don't know what, you know, particular courses are being taught on a campus, you know, there may be a need for you to teach, you know, literature over poetry or whatever. So make sure that you are asking the host institutions about their needs and not simply dictating what you need from them. So a lot of questions about competitiveness. So like I said earlier, I cannot share the success rate. I can say that we award typically between 20 and 25 global scholars a year. It's usually been 20, but I think this year we're doing 25. Can you say a little bit more about book allowance? Does it need to be hard copy books or are electronic books and other books? So you can spend it on whatever educational materials you need. That money is given to you when you start out your grant. We do not ask you to submit receipts or, you know, we really trust that our grantees are using it on materials that they are going to be then donating to the institution, you know. It can be used on software, it can, you know, whatever is most relevant to your project. If we do the dual country option, do the two countries have to be the same for each trip? No, you can, you know, if we go back to the Morocco, France, Brazil, you could do one dual country trip to France and Morocco, and then you could do another dual country trip to Brazil and Morocco if you wanted. That's fine. You would just need to explain why you would want to go back to one country twice, and then the others you would only go once. As long as you're able to make an argument for that in your application, I see no issue with it. And so a couple questions about teaching. So we do not offer a teaching only portion to this grant. So if you only want to teach and you have no interest in research, then the Global Award would not be for you. But, you know, the balance of research to teaching is really up to you and your host institution to negotiate and determine. So if, you know, your research portion is small and you're going to mostly be teaching, that is also fine. And do you need to teach the same topic in different countries if I prepare a series of lectures? Like I mentioned earlier in my presentation, you know, you do need to make an argument about how each grant segment is interrelated. So, you know, I would not advise you to teach, you know, one topic in one country and something completely different than another. Would you technically be able to scoot by in terms of eligibility? Yes. Would your application be competitive? Probably not. So you really want to be able to, you know, connect that thread between each grant segment. Okay. I know we've reached our hour. I'm happy to stay on and keep answering a couple of these questions. But if any of you do need to hop off after the hour, that's perfectly fine. If you have any further questions, my email address is on the screen. Someone was asking, what is the name of the award that would involve Spain and another country? So there is the Morocco-Spain Joint Teaching Research Award, and then there is the Spain-Greece Joint Teaching Research Award. If you go into our catalog and you search for Spain, both of those awards should pop up. In the catalog of awards, if you haven't already explored, use the advanced search function. It is really, it's a great tool. You can search by multi-country awards. I also recommend that you do a keyword search with, you know, particular keywords that relate to your discipline to see if there are any other, like, single country awards that are, you know, they really want someone with your niche expertise. We have a midwifery education award. So, you know, look and see if there's anything really specific like that. Let's see. I teach music therapy, which is not showing up as a discipline. So not all disciplines are listed in our catalog. If we did, I think it would be kind of crazy. It would be hard to search and find. So I would advise you to do a keyword search doing music therapy in quotes. So quote, music therapy, end quote, and see if anything shows up. Or you can use the general music discipline. I know we sort of tend to lump lots of different disciplines together, and that's just the way it is. Okay, at completion of a professional project, how much emphasis is put on disseminating the information knowledge gained back in the USA? So that is a component of the review criteria impact multiplier effect. I think that it is not as heavily emphasized as the impact to the host country, but it is also a factor. So if you have any plans for, you know, putting together a journal article or presenting to your peers at a conference about what you did on your research grant or whatever it is, you should include, you know, definitely include a couple sentences about what you plan to do and what the impact is going to be to your field and to your home institution. Questions about bibliography. So there's no bibliography required for professional projects, right? That is incorrect. There is a bibliography required for professional projects. Again, will the webinar slides be recorded and posted online? Yes, they will next week. Check back to our webinar archive. Oh, this is a really good question. Is it good or bad to go back to a country that you may have visited for a previous Fulbright scholar, for previous Fulbright visit? So for the Global Award, I think it is difficult. I would not advise you to go back to a country that you already did a Fulbright in. I think the bar to clear is already very high with Global to, make an argument about why you deserve another Fulbright grant. If you are choosing to go back to a country that you've already spent a lot of time in or that you've already had a Fulbright grant in, then what you really need to do is convince the reviewers and convince the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board that A, you got a lot out of your previous grant, and B, what new things are you going to get out of this grant that you didn't get on previous visits to the host country or during previous Fulbright grants? And that argument needs to be made very, very convincingly. I think it's also a good idea if you've already had a lot of experience in the country that you're going to frame it as an advantage in terms of your relationship with host institutions, that you know a lot of people there, therefore your project is going to be more feasible, your cultural knowledge, your language abilities, things like that, to sort of demonstrate the review criteria about your personal qualities, your adaptability, your language skills, things like that. So make sure that you are doing both, talking about what new things you're going to get out of it that you weren't able to get out of previous grants, but then also emphasizing the skills that you gained during your previous experiences. But if you are applying for a Fulbright scholar, I would not recommend applying to go to the same country that you already went to. There's a very low success rate for that. Is there a requirement to return to the U.S. at the end of the program for a certain amount of time? No. Can someone apply for a specialist grant and a global grant? Yes. There's no waiting period or conflict between specialist and global. The only limitation would be that you would not be able to go out on a specialist grant while you are currently a global scholar. So, for example, if you are going out to Morocco on your global scholar grant, you would sort of be put on a pause within the specialist roster. You wouldn't be able to go out on a specialist grant while you're also out on a global grant. However, if you come back, you're doing a flex grant, you come back from your global grant, and you're going to be home from January to June, and a 2-week, opportunity for specialists comes up in between your grant segments, then that's fine. But you can apply to be on the specialist grant and apply for a global grant at the same time as well. A question about language. If you're a native speaker, you do not need to get your language evaluated. You can note that in your application. And if you're not a native speaker, even if you do have a PhD in the language, you do still need to have your language evaluated by an external evaluator. It's a very simple form that they fill out. It's about four, I think, four or five questions that they answer, just attesting to your language skills. So, if you have someone that teaches the language that you're interested in or the language that you're proposing, you can, just ask a professor on your campus to fill it out. And then another question about how many languages can you upload? I think you can upload up to three in the application. So for each country, if there's a different language in each country, then you can upload all of them. I'm a retired professor. Can I apply? Yes. I was a Fulbright scholar 2 years ago. Like I said earlier, it depends on when your grant ended. So Anna, if you could email me and let me know what was the month and year that your grant ended, then I can let you know if you're eligible to apply this cycle. There's some questions about the minimum and maximum length of time that you can spend in each country, so I'm going to just go back to this and really please do closely read the award description within the catalog of awards. But there is a, when you add up all of the grant segments, you need to have at least 3 months and maximum 6 months. 1 month must be spent in each host country, each visit, and the maximum amount of time that you can spend would be 3 months. So, you know, you can do 1 month, 1 month, 1 month, 2 months, 2 months, 2 months, 3 months, 3 months, 1 month, 2 month, 1 month. You know, you can, there are a lot of different ways to do it. And if you are, you know, you have any confusion or you want to like run your schedule by me to make sure that it fits, you know, feel free to email me. Okay. All right. Fantastic. Well, I am going to wrap things up for today. I'm sorry I wasn't able to get to all of your questions, but some of them were really specific. And some of these about dual citizenship, I don't know the answer to right now. So if you email me, I can follow up with our Europe team or our Africa team to see if there's any issue with dual citizenship. But typically there isn't. So like I said, I'm going to be archiving this webinar at some time next week. So if you're interested in listening again or sharing this with your colleagues, feel free. Now, on behalf of IIE, I would just like to thank you for taking your time to attend this webinar. And I really look forward to reading your applications on September 16th, which is the application deadline. Don't forget, September 16th. All right, everybody, have a great rest of your day.